Most people have seen Jack Nicholson in The Shining, axing his way through the door. When she gives you that look, I'm telling you, she looks very much like that, like mad.
There are people out there that are dangerous. You know, this stuff does exist. There are dangerous people out there making a very, very good living out of being criminals. But you don't expect to find it in Mill Hill.
I've heard now about the three relationships she had, and it all seems to be about extortion. She wanted money. She never wanted to pay anything.
If you're that worried that actually your whole life is going to be blown apart and revealed as a complete lie, then obviously that provides a strong motive in some people's cases to carry out the ultimate act, which is to kill somebody.
Killing somebody for her, I don't know how difficult it is, but she can do it, and then she can move on and perhaps pretend it didn't happen.
The first indication I had that she's a psychopath was probably the moment she hit me with a baseball bat. Up until that point, I hadn't got a clue. I had no idea what I was dealing with.
Dina Holmes arrived at Crawley Police Station in West Sussex just before 10 o'clock this morning. Shortly afterwards, detectives began questioning her about the death of her former husband 8 years ago.
In December 2003, Dina Thompson, dubbed the Black Widow, was convicted of murder by poisoning her husband with a hot curry. In their investigation, Sussex police uncovered a 20-year career of fraud, deception, theft, and bigamy. To outsiders, Dina appears ordinary, but her victims believe she has the power to captivate men and destroy their lives. Those who've survived relationships with Dina say that she is a disturbed fantasist living in many different worlds. She led a life of crime, which was eventually exposed by the mother of one of her victims.
It is with great sadness that those of us who are still here have discovered what she is really like. She is dishonest, untruthful, manipulative, deceitful, and scheming. And ladies and gentlemen, justice has been served today.
Dina lied and stole her way through three marriages whilst conning a whole string of other men at the same time. She even persuaded one husband to go into hiding for years after she told him his life was in danger.
We have some evidence of her mind being full of some pretty horrible things, very dramatic, deathly things, murderous things, poisonous things. Why is she dangerous? Because she acts those out and they're not just fantasies. Why is she particularly dangerous? Because she gets other people to act things out as well. And that is exceptional.
It was only when she was acquitted of the attempted murder of her third husband in 2000 that Dina's extraordinary criminal life unraveled. This is her story. She was born Dina Holmes in 1960 into a lower middle class family from Hendon. She left school with 10 O-levels. Dina's career started with a job behind the till at the local branch of the Halifax Building Society. She met her first husband, Lee Wyatt, on a blind date set up by his cousin, Bob. Dina and Lee hit it off straight away.
Do you know, the first word that came into my head is humour.
Yes.
Would you say that was right?
Humour.
Yeah, I would say it was humour. Everything seemed to be a good laugh. I mean,
nothing was serious, was it?
Nothing was really serious.
Dina and Lee moved to the South Coast and married in a registry office. They had a son and set up home in a Sussex village just below the South Downs.
Yapton is a very small village. It's has grown up over the last few years. There are a lot more people here than there ever was. A very small community, local shops, and everybody seems to say hello. So it's a very friendly, happy place to live.
They were okay. Yeah, just ordinary neighbours when they first moved here. Because we're right next door, we would get to know them and just say hello if we were going out in the morning and things, but no, no, we wouldn't sort of go next door and say, oh, hello, I'm so-and-so.
Dina got a job in the Woolwich Building Society in nearby Arundel.
Lee kept himself to himself, enough to say hello and good morning, the usual things, but he was never there long enough to build up a conversation with. He was always there for a day or two and then gone, and maybe come back a week later or a fortnight later and be there for a couple of days and then gone again. So it was very difficult to sort of actually get to know him very well.
Lee was only here for what seemed a couple of weeks, and then he wasn't here then after that. We didn't see him.
In Lee's absence, a new man came into Dina's life. He was Julian Webb, an advertising rep for the West Sussex Gazette.
He'd put forward this idea of doing a makeover with somebody using products from and clothes from local shops as an advertising vehicle for the local businesses. He suggested Dina was the ideal person to be the model in this, and she actually loved it. He was devoted to his hobbies, which were mainly keep fit, bodybuilding, and also fishing. He was a passionate fisherman. And that was how he spent his life until he met her. And she then just totally took over his life.
One day, walking out the back door, just happened to see Dina and another man kissing on the back doorstep, which was rather strange, to say the least.
First time I met Dina was when she and Julian came round here to tell me that they were actually planning to get married. Now, I was a little bit taken aback at the speed with which this happened, because he'd only known her since May, and it was only August, and here they were planning to get married.
It was about a fortnight, 3 weeks after, that there were wedding cards all over the front windowsill, which you could plainly see from outside, as there was no nets.
The neighbours were confused. Why were there wedding cards in Dina's window when she was already married? They hadn't seen her husband, Lee Wyatt, for ages. He'd simply disappeared. In 1991, Dina Wyatt was working at the Woolwich Building Society in Arundel, and having an affair with Julian Webb. But there was a mystery over the disappearance of her first husband, Lee Wyatt. Meanwhile, 300 miles away in the Cornish seaside resort of Newquay, a stranger arrived, looking for work.
Colin Mitchell arrived one day applying for a job, literally walked in off the street, asked if there's any jobs available, which there was at the time. So I took him on. He said to me that he was coming down here to get away from his life in West Sussex, I believe it was, which was nothing strange at the time, because a lot of people come to Newquay to work for the summer or something like that. And he just didn't... Nothing struck me as strange with that. That's just a normal, everyday thing here.
He was very easygoing. He got on with everybody. Didn't have any problems. He went out a few times with us for a few drinks, and we all had a staff meal, he was there for that, we all got on. And nothing's untoward, you know? I mean, you take people at face value, don't you?
With the job, there came accommodation, which is above the arcade. So he was allowed to rent the flats, so he lived on top of the job, basically.
The new employee had a secret. Colin Mitchell was really Dina's first husband, Lee Wyatt. And he was on the run because Dina had lied to him to get him out of the way.
What was he running from? Why did he go into hiding? Why did he change his identity? Why was he constantly changing his job? There must have been something a little more behind it. He was really convinced that there was something to be very, very afraid of.
Lee was in fear for his life after a business deal had gone badly wrong. 8 years earlier, Dina and Lee had set up a cuddly toy business. Lee was the salesman and Dina the seamstress.
If they were going to go into any business, that was it. Yeah, zany cuddly toys, definitely.
Definitely.
Dina and Lee's finest creation was a leprechaun. They named him Sean.
Thinking of it now, I never seem to remember any sort of working drawings or sketches that she'd knocked up. They seem to just suddenly, appear. And then she sort of just run it up with her sewing machine overnight type of thing, stuffed a load of whatever it is in it, and there's this leprechaun thing, you know.
Dina was saying that she was approached by Aer Lingus and to give this toy, Sean the Leprechaun, to first-class passengers who flew with Aer Lingus. Mm. And we thought, my goodness, what a fantastic contact. You know, you're just starting off business, that's absolutely brilliant.
It wasn't only Aer Lingus. Dina told Lee that the Disney Corporation wanted to license Sean for millions.
She had, to my mind, sort of control over what Lee was doing and, you know, what he could and couldn't do.
Dina then convinced Lee that the Mafia knew about the Disney deal and that they wanted their share of the profits from Sean the Leprechaun, or they would kill Lee and his family. Dina told Lee that to protect them, he had to go on the run. Lee decided that the best thing to do was to change his identity.
He said he'd got the, I think it's the Day of the Jackal. In it, it gives explicit details how to disappear. He said, you can actually do it, and you can actually go through that process and disappear with a new identity.
What do you mean it wasn't Colin Mitchell? You know, we were like, his real name's Lee Wyatt, and then it all springs into place, and you go, well, maybe that's why when we were shouting Colin, he wasn't replying. We thought he might have been a little bit deaf. But, you know, he never used to turn around or anything like that. So you just thought, well, with the noise in this place, you know, it's understandable. Maybe he just doesn't hear you. But now you find out that it wasn't his real name, then it's obvious why he didn't reply to the name Colin.
Knowing Lee as we do, I think that he wanted his wife to be safe and his son to be safe and not really care about his own
well-being.
His own well-being.
Mm.
And I think that's why he disappeared and ran away and believed what Dina was telling him.
But Dina had lied. There was no Disney deal and there were no Mafia hitmen. Dina wasn't interviewed by Professor Cordes, but he advised Sussex police on her case.
She has an enormous ability to project, but this is an intense form of it. I would say got a sort of psychotic flavour, that is a crazy flavour, so intense that it makes people, by some extraordinary mechanism which I couldn't possibly, well, I can't explain, it has an influence over people which makes them do things that their normal selves would never have done or do again.
Meanwhile, Lee paid his wages into Dina's bank account. Unknown to him, he was funding her wedding day, as she was about to get married again. On the 2nd of November 1991, Dina married Julian Webb. Only Dina knew that the marriage was bigamous.
They got married and immediately went to America on honeymoon.
Dina and Julian returned from their Florida honeymoon and settled down to married life at Dina's home in Yapton.
I had the impression that sometimes it was awkward for her by having him there. There were several occasions when, I think you'd call it near misses, where Julian used to always come home for lunch and a male visitor would be just leaving. He would be pulling out the clothes as Julian would pull in. On several occasions, it was very, very near.
In the early months of their marriage, Dina told Julian that she was terminally ill and that the Woolwich were about to get rid of her.
Well, he said that they were threatening to sack her because she was having too much time off for illness, and he thought it was outrageous because she was, in his mind, a very sick person who needed treatment.
Dina lied about her reasons for being sacked. £26,000 was missing from the accounts, and she was being investigated. Dina claimed that her first husband, Lee Wyatt, had come back to Yapton. She blamed Lee for the missing money and said that he was threatening her.
The fact that this husband seemed to be in the background creating mayhem and, you know, attacking her violently and sort of attacking everybody as far as I could see. And I was concerned, obviously, that, you know, maybe Julian would be the next target.
Dina told Julian that Lee was sending hate mail. She secretly recorded him making threatening phone calls.
Hello?
Is that Dina?
Yeah, is that Lee?
Ah, you remember. Not getting any younger, are we?
No, I'm not getting any younger.
Roses are red, violence is black. You need a as a payback.
I was in the front room with a friend of mine when doorbell went. I went to the door and Dina was standing there, clutching her blouse. So I decided to ring my wife at work to ask her advice what I should do.
So, well, the first thing is to get a doctor. You must get somebody around to see if she's OK. It was difficult for me on the end of a phone. So, of course, that's obviously what he did. I wasn't here at the time, so I don't know. But then I came home and Dina was next door. She said that she'd been attacked and she'd been raped in the house.
Dina had lied about Lee's harassment, but Sussex police took her allegations seriously.
Dina made some very serious allegations against Lee during that period of time, which included, in effect, stalking her, breaking into her home, or in fact his home as well, as it was, assaulting her. There's the one where he's alleged to have burnt her with a cigarette, jabbed her with the knife.
Lee, wanted by the police, and he thought by the mafia, turned up at Dina's house. Julian was asleep upstairs. Lee confronted Dina about her stories. She sent him away. But Dina's lies were catching up with her.
The 30th of June was a Thursday. I can remember that as though it was engraved on the wall in front of me. It was his birthday, and I came home from work and I thought that I'd, you know, give him a ring to wish him a happy birthday. So I phoned, and Dina answered the phone and said that he was ill and that he'd been ill since Tuesday, and that he'd had too much sun, which was very unlike him because he didn't lie out in the sun, and that he was being sick and that he'd been drinking, which was also very unlike him.
At 1:20 in the morning, the doorbell went, which we were both awoken by the sound.
I thought, crack, it's Dina. So I said, Dina, are you OK? She said, oh, it's Julian. I can't wake him up. He stopped breathing. I said, what do you mean you can't wake him up? I said, what on earth happened? So she said, I can't wake him up. I've called the ambulance and I've tried to revive him, but I can't wake him up. I came out, the ambulance man had just arrived. So Dina was in the house and they followed her up the stairs and I followed them. They laid Julian on the floor and they proceeded to put the heart monitor on, obviously to test for pulse, etc. And all you could hear was this one long, continuous sound, nothing, nothing at all. I sort of went close to Dina and I put my arm around her and I said, what on earth has happened? I said, what's been going on? I said, he was OK a few days ago. You know, he said he had the flu. What's happened? And he said he'd taken some pills. So they put Julian in the ambulance in the back.
They then said to Dina that, you know, we're going to go to St Richard's Hospital now. I think it may be better for you if you sat in the front. Of which she seemed like an excited child, just been given a bag of sweets. Oh, great, I can sit in the front. Almost like, can we put the sirens on as well?
I was awake when the police came round to tell me what had happened. And I knew. I knew when I saw them, before I'd spoken to them, when I saw looked out of the window and saw I heard this car come up from upstairs, you see, looked out of the window, saw it was a police car. I just knew.
Julian Webb died on his 31st birthday from an overdose of antidepressants and aspirin.
Well, I arrived at work about 7:30 and I was walking down Arundel High Street and became aware that there were two figures sitting on the doorstep of the office, and I thought at first they were vagrants. And then when I arrived and got closer, I realised it was a man and a woman. The woman was apparently wearing a nightdress under an overcoat, and I then recognised her as Dina, Julian's wife. And she was alternately crying and also lucid in a very strange fashion. And her first words were to me, amidst tears, "Julian's dead." And then in the next breath, she said quite clearly and coherently, "I want to see the advertising manager about the insurance money on his life."
Julian had died of a massive overdose of drugs. Dina said he had committed suicide. But before he died, he was in good health and high spirits. The police began to investigate.
She told me that he had taken an overdose of tranquilizers and aspirin. And I said, "Well, whose are the tranquilizers?" And she said they were hers. And she said that, I said, "Well, how did he get hold of them?" And she said she didn't know. And she said they were kept in a drawer in the kitchen.
It was reported that the coroner found no evidence that Julian had accidentally taken a lethal overdose, but there was insufficient evidence to say whether it was suicide or not. At the inquest, Sussex police stated there was no proof that his death was suspicious. The coroner recorded an open verdict. The police closed their investigation.
She started to say, "Well, you know, if you won't get on with it, I will, and I'm going to have him cremated." And, you know, being very unpleasant and nasty, I thought, my God, you know.
And then to finally turn up at the funeral the way she did was not grieving. She'd left the house in a black leather miniskirt with a black blouse on, hardly covering anything, waving as she left.
The funeral was at a church on Hayling Island called Northney, or rather it's in Northney. It's a small, old church, and yet it was packed out.
And immediately I noticed that the right-hand side of the church was packed with mourners, family, friends, colleagues from work. And I looked to my left, and to my surprise I only saw one person sitting there, and that was Dina.
And I shall never forget the sight of her face. It was totally expressionless. I don't remember any family or anyone else talking to her.
There were some lovely wreaths from the family. But the one thing that struck me about the flowers from Dina, it looked as though the flowers had been gathered from round the cemetery, and they were stuffed into a paper bag that you might buy some shopping in, a cake shop or something. And there was a card. And to the best of my memory, the card said, "To Julian, because you love me so." And I think that was a very odd thing to write on a card accompanying the flowers.
I thought she was probably responsible. In fact, I didn't think she probably was responsible. I thought she was responsible.
He was a thrill to be with, is the only way I can describe it. Julian will remain in my memory forever, particularly sitting on this part of the beach where I could see him casting. He was a great caster, a great angler, and a great person.
With Julian Webb recently buried and Lee Wyatt somewhere on the run, Dina was alone again. But for how long? Dina's first husband, Lee Wyatt, had disappeared. Her second husband, Julian Webb, died mysteriously. Once again, Dina found herself single and available.
There were a lot of men coming and going after Julian's death. Some lasted a day or two, some lasted longer. There were various cars that were arriving at the front, various different faces in the clothes, different sounds from next door, different voices. So you soon got to know that a new guy was on the scene.
Robert Waite used to work with Dina at the Halifax Building Society in 1980. Years later, he received a card from Dina inviting him to a reunion party.
I actually rang Dina from my mother's, and I said, "Never guess who's on your doorstep." And I heard this kind of slight panic at the end of the phone in her voice. Who's that? I said, "It's Robert. You wrote to me. I used to work with you at the Halifax." You know, she says, oh, yes. And a couple of sentences and a very flat voice. "Would you like to come round to dinner?"
Mandy Fuchs also worked with Robert and Dina. They used to compete for Robert's affection.
She'd always had this thing that something had happened with Robert and I, and fortunately or unfortunately, I guess maybe unfortunately, nothing ever did, but he was just my friend.
I rang the doorbell and she came to the door. And you'd expect a smile or like, "Hi, I haven't seen you. Oh, wow, you know, great." Nothing like that. She was like, "Hello," and she lowered her eyes like that. I looked at her face and I thought, still traces of how you were, but the years hadn't been kind. It's not that she looked very old. There was no spark, I guess.
And she had great delight in going into, like, they'd had this meal and one thing led to another and all of a sudden they were in bed. And I was like, "Dina, like, I don't really want to know this." And it was, but she wanted me to know.
One day, Julian's name came up in conversation.
"Julian died," she said. I said, "Oh, God, what happened?" She said, "Well, he was into weight training and he took an overdose of steroids." So there's this woman whose first husband had gone and apparently had hit her and tortured her in other ways. And this other man had come along who'd died. And I thought, well, no wonder she's down and depressed or not herself.
A few days later, I got this very cross Dina, and she was not a happy bunny, and telling me that Robert basically said, like, "You don't really ring my bells," which is a polite way of obviously saying that they'd had possibly had a bottle of wine and they'd gone to bed, but it's not really what he wanted. And she was not happy. I have to say, she wasn't happy.
She just so delicately dropped into the conversation that she had to go off and have radiotherapy. You know. And I said, "Wow, what's the matter? You know, what's up here?" She said, "Oh, just a little problem I've got, nothing for you to worry about."
Basically, she was telling him that she was dying, and Robert is a nice guy, and there's no way he'd walk away from somebody that was dying. So at that stage, he got well and truly hook, lined and sinkered into a situation that she was had somehow, as they say, spun a web. She definitely did it.
Robert decided to take Dina to her favourite place, Florida, where he would take care of her during her final months.
I bought a black suit from River Island. It was a great suit, with my belongings going to come out there and a suitcase full of clothes. And we left the car at the airport in the short-stay car park because she said she'd arranged for her father to come up and pick the car up. And we flew out there. I was asleep, sleeping side by side in the motel. And I woke up and I felt this sharp jab in my side. I was obviously in a deep sleep, and I woke up, and I remember saying, "Well, what's that? You know, something." I think she said, "Oh, sorry, I just scratched you, or something bit you, or something." She said something. She was awake, very awake. I didn't wake her up by asking her. She was very awake. I'm pretty sure I lost a day that week. In fact, I know I did. The days didn't add up. And although I did a question that with her, I said, "What did we do that day?" You know, and she added up what we'd done. It didn't make any sense. But I suppose it's a bit like a date rape thing. You know, it comes back to people afterwards. And I don't really want to say any more about this, but as sure as I can be, I think I lost a day. And I don't really want to think about those hours I was unconscious. If that's all right.
Dina left Robert penniless, saying she had to appear as a witness in an anti-mafia trial in New York. But she was actually flying back to Britain. She had to appear in court for defrauding the Woolwich.
I had no food, nothing at all. And we were talking getting on for a period of 3 weeks. I was getting to the point where, when you're really hungry, you do strange things. You sort of curl up on the bed in the fetal position.
Stranded, unable to afford a ticket home, Robert was arrested, handcuffed, fingerprinted, and deported.
I went round to Yapton to find out what happened to my stuff and to get some answers. And it was Jackie Howells, the neighbour next door, who told me that Dina had been sentenced that day, 31st of August 1995, for fraud and deception and the rest of it.
Dina was convicted for stealing £26,000 from the Woolwich Building Society in 1991. She had created a bogus account for an imaginary customer who had supposedly stolen the money with her first husband, Lee Wyatt. But the real thief was Dina.
She basically created a woman called Christina Duke and was transferring money into her account, when in fact she was Christina Duke, and siphoning off money from other accounts into that one account.
And the hate mail and threatening phone calls from Lee were actually elaborate lies invented by Dina. In the letters, Lee claimed he had stolen the money with Christina Duke, but Christina didn't exist, and Dina herself had dictated the letters to Lee. She had also scripted and recorded the phone calls so that Lee would incriminate himself.
Roses are red, violence is black, you need a as a payback.
Lee did what Dina said because he believed that it was the only way to protect his family.
He was literally incriminating himself in the letters, saying he was on the run with Christina, in fact, the woman who never existed, and the police would never catch him, he's too clever for him. And there's a number of such letters. But again, you've got to ask the question, how on earth can a woman influence her husband to write such letters and change his lifestyle completely as he did?
Dina's allegations of rape and assault against Lee were also lies. Police discovered the truth. At the time they were supposed to have happened, Lee was hundreds of miles away, working at the amusement arcade in Newquay.
Lee was eventually arrested and interviewed for those offences, and in fact was charged. However, provided this alibi, and as a result of that alibi, it was clear that he was innocent of those offences and the charges were subsequently dropped.
Dina was sentenced to 18 months in prison for stealing from the Woolwich. She was released after 9 months and returned to Yapton.
When Dina came out of prison, I think probably most neighbours in the neighbourhood had a sly bet with one another. Oh, will she come back? Will she not come back? Will she have the front? Will she not have the front? And she did. She came back.
I met Dina. I went into an embroidery shop in Warwick Street in Worthing. And I went in there to get a design done for my business shirts. And she was in there and she overheard a conversation, I suppose. And she just said, well, I can do that for you if you want, if you've got a design. I do cross-stitch, and I'm sure I can do a design for you, in cross-stitch on your shirts. And we arranged to meet in the pub later on that night.
Phil Trott was a landscape gardener. Dina told Phil that her friend in Florida would give him a big contract to landscape her garden. They took research trips around the gardens of English stately homes.
You have a kiss and cuddle on a park bench or something, and you start getting a bit horny. And, and I say one of the things that she liked to enjoy, she enjoyed doing, was having sex in public and flashing her bits. Because we were taking photos all the time, she used to just, lift a skirt and look at this. So I used to just quickly snap a photo every now and again, But she liked posing, like playing in front of the camera.
For weeks, Phil and Dina's relationship was fun and carefree. But then, tragedy struck.
We're in her bedroom one day, and she started coughing into her hand, and she just went, "Oh no, not again." And I looked, and looked in the hand, and it was red, and you know, it was blood. And she said, "Oh, I've got to go to the bathroom, wash it off." You know, I said, "What is wrong with you? What's the matter?" Yeah? And she didn't want to tell me. She, you know, she says, "I can't tell you. It's personal. You know, I'm not going to tell you." And in the end, after a while, you know, I just said, I said, "You can tell me. You know, what's wrong?" And that's when she first told me that she had cancer of the throat.
But there was no cancer, and there was no friend in Florida. Dina persuaded Phil to pretend to his family that they had gone there anyway.
I used to sit there in the evenings with her while she was cross-stitching, and I just said one day, I said, "I reckon I could do that. You know, give us a bit of material and a pattern, and I'll have a go." And so she gave me some patterns of flowers, and so I used to sit there and cross-stitch the flowers with her. And you know, they looked nice, and she said they were good. So she gave me a big tiger to do. So I started that, and it started to look good, so I carried on.
Within a couple of months, Phil was disturbed to find his credit cards in Dina's handbag and cash missing.
I found out one of my mates, and he came round, and we changed the locks on my door because she had a key to get in. And then the phone went, and she phoned, and she said, "Oh, been down the travel agent, it's got a bit of a problem. I'm coming back home. I'll be there in 10 minutes. So I thought, I don't want to upset her, so better change the locks back so she doesn't know that I've tweaked anything. Anyway, then we changed the locks back. And then after half an hour or so, me and my mates were talking and we were saying, "No, this ain't right, something's wrong." So we changed the locks back again. And then she turned up and couldn't get in. And that's when she said, "Why have you changed the locks? Is there something wrong?" And that's when I said, you're a fake. There's something not right. There's lots of things that you've done and said that just don't add up. And so you just get in your car and go away. And can I have my phone back?"
Julian was dead. Lee Wyatt's life had been ruined. But Dina had a steady flow of men replying to her ads placed in Lonely Hearts columns. Richard Thompson was a divorced telecoms manager. He answered an ad placed by a bubbly blonde, and within a few months, Dina was married again. She was now Mrs. Thompson.
The second trip to Florida, we arranged to get married in the Holiday Inn. She was saying, "Right, I'll arrange for these people to be our witnesses." We'd had everything prearranged, and all we had left was these witnesses to get married to. When we got out there, lo and behold, they didn't materialise. So at the last minute, literally, I had to go around the hotel and say, you know, "Would someone be prepared to be our witnesses?" And I think it was actually the hotel manager and one of his staff was our witnesses to us getting married.
Dina promised him a new life in Florida. She encouraged Richard to finally realise his childhood dreams.
She knew I always wanted a boat. So she said, "Let's set you up in business as a big game fishing skipper out in Florida." So I went to American Sea School that was actually run by the US Coast Guard. I worked very hard towards it. And I was the only Brit, as far as I know, that had done this. And I passed the exam basically flying colours. I was so pleased that all this work had paid off, and it was a lot of hard work. She didn't react very much, now I come to think about it. There wasn't much of a reaction at all. Almost like, "Oh, is that it?"
What did she say then?
Well, she was too busy. She was having her nails done at the time.
Dina and Richard's move to America was imminent. Richard took early retirement, and Dina spent his payoff renovating his cottage to rent it out while they were away.
There's a waste disposal installed in the sink. All our waste food goes down there. But what she specifically asked me once was, would it get rid of bones? But I said, no, you can't get rid of bones within that.
Dina, now Mrs. Thompson, was on her third marriage. She and Richard were planning a new life in America.
She had bought me a German Shepherd. Always wanted a German Shepherd. His name was Odin. And from my recollection, probably a month or so before her attack on me, she actually asked me, do you mind if I pretend to attack you and see what Odin does? So she pretended to attack me just by punching. Odin bit her. He went for her because I was the one that was always looking after him, feeding him and walking him. And he was loyal to me. On the day of the attack on me, she had locked him away.
Richard says that Dina told him that a solicitor would be arriving with a green card, and the following day, he would fly to Florida. She ran a hot bath for her husband to celebrate his imminent departure.
Now I come to think about it, I can't believe how I put myself into such a vulnerable situation. She said, yes, I've got a surprise for you. I'd like you to lie on the floor. Yes, she did tie my hands behind my back and she put some tape around my ankles. And she placed a towel across my face. And then next thing I know, bang, absolute colossal pain in my head. Then it happened again. The blood was pouring out of my head into my eyes. What she'd done was hit me with an aluminium baseball bat. And also, at some point, she'd put a carving knife in my shoulder. She slipped to the floor, yet she slipped in the blood. So what I did, I felt for her face. And I pushed my thumb into her eye. So I've got my thumb on her face, sorry, thumb in her eye. I saw her hand go for the knife, and she grabbed the knife, so I just increased the pressure. And I said, I'm going to give you a choice here. You let go of the knife, I'm going to push your eye through your head.
Dina was arrested and tried at Lewis Crown Court for the attempted murder of Richard Thompson. She pleaded not guilty. She claimed that Richard became violent when she told him that Florida was all a lie. She said she had hit him with the baseball bat in self-defense. The jury believed her, and on August the 17th, 2000, Dina Thompson was acquitted of attempted murder. But she admitted 15 counts of deception against Richard and her former lovers and was jailed again. She was sentenced to 3 years and 9 months.
I mean, the basic defence for Dina on that inquiry was self-defence. She was acting literally in self-defence, and the jury believed.
I have never seen such a miscarriage of justice. I thought the way the whole thing was handled was appalling. To making me feel like I was the criminal. That is how she got away with her attempted murder against me, was by character assassination of me.
During the investigation into the alleged murder attempt on Richard Thompson, Sussex police took a closer look at Dina's life. They soon learned that Dina had exploited other men. They became suspicious of Dina's account of Julian's death. After the verdict, the police announced a reinvestigation into Julian Webb's death.
Dina Holmes arrived at Crawley Police Station in West Sussex just before 10 o'clock this morning. Shortly afterwards, detectives began questioning her about the death of her former husband 8 years ago.
Police exhumed Julian's body in a search for more clues about his death. But forensic tests failed to reveal any new evidence. The case against Dina was circumstantial. Police focused on the conflicting accounts Dina had given of the night Julian died. Dina was charged with murder. In a written statement, she told police that she could not accurately recall what had happened on the night Julian died. Dina's lies had finally caught up with her.
There was only two people in the house on that night, you and Julian. And of course, sadly, Julian can't help. But you were there, Dina. But tell me what happened.
I've given you a statement I'm not giving you anymore.
At her trial, the prosecution argued that Dina had murdered Julian Webb for money. They said that she had laced his favourite meal, a hot curry, with a lethal dose of prescription drugs.
What we shouldn't lose sight of is the fact that actually her different accounts were significantly different. It wasn't just about, oh, I've got it an hour wrong there, or, oh, sorry, I've got the day wrong. We were talking about fundamental differences, you know, like the fact that, you know, she would tell one person that he hadn't eaten for 4 days, and then she'd tell somebody, oh, he had a hot curry, or he wasn't a drinker, and then it suddenly, you know, oh, he drunk himself stupid in the days leading up to his death.
What I would say on that point is that she did in fact say that. I can't remember it, it's so long ago.
Yes.
But that's something you're going to remember for the rest of your life, your husband dying in his bed on a hot sunny day in July.
Yeah. I mean, if you're innocent, I would venture to suggest you remember every second of that particular day. Sure. There may well be individuals who, frankly, are too embarrassed to have actually come forward.
I'd give an estimate of about a dozen that we've identified as a rough estimate, but I'm sure there's more out there.
Is that the case?
That's the case.